This is Pure Decking, show number 240 for Thursday. What the fuck is today? October something. October the 13th? Thursday the 13th. Okay, well, good. It's not Friday the 13th.
No, unless it's Friday the 14th.
Unless you're listening to this on a Friday. In which case, it's a 13th and a Friday. So if you listen to this today late, you're going to have bad luck. I'm Morps. This is show about stuff that interests me. Like our current police state, information security, and I need to find a mug that doesn't defrost quite so quickly. My Dragon's Milk mug has gone painfully clear lately. Anyways, I'm Morps, and tonight I am drinking Dragon's Milk, and we have RU486. What's up, RU?
How much, man? Just for all those who are having a bad Friday listening to this on Thursday, on Friday the 13th, it's actually 14th Friday, so you skipped all bad luck, so null and void to Morts' comments. Go on about it and have a great day.
Well done. Hang on. We have an official
smoke report. Weed every day.
BSV.
Every day.
Are you smoking weed?
Nah, just drinking some Angry Orchard. And though people have safely not gotten bad luck, we are still releasing the crazy people with hockey masks and machetes into the wild, so...
Oh, you're responsible for the clowns.
I thought we were out of those. Dude, you told me you were out.
Thanks to Amazon.
The cloning machine is back up and running. Just had to get a few spare parts.
Okay, you got the cloning machine working, and you went back to making the clowns, not the supermodels.
I had it tested. I didn't want a supermodel.
You didn't want supermodels with three beer boobs, a machete, and a hockey mask coming out? Actually, that sounds kind of...
He wants kinky, not murdery kinky.
Send you one of those if you want, but...
You don't want to get stabbed, what was it, like 130 times? And have to call the police?
Only if it's a three-way and your partner wouldn't change positions with you. Remember that story?
That was an old-ass story now. Guy got stabbed like
47 times.
Was it 47 times? Okay.
Yep. Because he wouldn't change position in a three-way.
Like, dude, look into a safe word. My God.
Fantastic.
Anyways, let me throw the... So I got two articles to look at for our discussion topic today. So first one in the chat rooms. And I'll go ahead and throw the second one out there. And the second one is a little politically biased, but I don't not actually care about the politics here. It's more the free speech aspect of it. So anyway, so first one, CIA claims it can predict some social unrest up to 5 days ahead of time. Back in March 2015, the CIA began setting up a new office, the Directorate of Digital Innovation, to integrate the latest tech into the agency's data gathering workflow, along with boosting the country's cyber defense. Cyber defense. Drink! I'm sorry, every time I see the word cyber, I know that that's what everybody uses nowadays for information security and information systems, but when I see cyber, I still think cyber sex. So, I mean, cyber sex defense, what is it, like a virtual condom? Anyways, according to its director, the department has helped the CIA as a whole improve its anticipatory intelligence. Anticipatory intelligence. God, that's a scary phrase. Speaking at the Next Tech event yesterday, Deputy Director for Digital Innovation Andrew Hallman, I think yesterday, and this story is from like the 10th, so... Yes, it's not. It wasn't actually yesterday. Deputy Director for Digital Innovation Andrew Hallman noted that in some instances, they've been able to forecast social unrest and societal instability in other countries by as much as 3 to 5 days out. That anticipatory intelligence has been boosted through a combination of algorithms and analytics to predict the flow of illicit goods or extremists, according to Defense One. Deep and machine learning makes sense of seemingly disparate data, helping analysts see patterns to anticipate national security threats and then apply it to a world. So they have perfected the bots that watch Facebook and Twitter for, hey, you guys want to go looting tomorrow?
oh, man.
That's wow. Seriously, that's what they're doing.
Know, it's proof. Like, I could have predicted the looting after the hurricane. It was easy. It's not, you know.
Looting after disaster? That never happens.
They don't just pour through the intelligence community's own proprietary information either. The Digital Innovation Department has been using more and more open source data sets with specialists who can combine public and agency information to draw more nuanced conclusions, which CIA Director John Bremen called a tremendous advantage. Combined with their increasing surveillance of social media, the agency is clearly looking to gobble up as much information as possible. With tech's best data parsing tools, they hope to get days of lead time to prepare for riots and social decay across the globe. They're preparing for the social decay.
They actually are.
I know.
I've been watching a lot of futuristic stuff. By analysts and things like that, do they mean agitators?
They could.
Because they're using specialists.
Well, the rumor is... The rumor is this day, usually if the NSA or the FBI is doing something illicit, they're going to claim to be anonymous while they're doing it.
Mm.
So, because, I mean, you know, prove that they're not.
Okay, so they're using outside specialists, so freelancers. So those not bound by the rule of law of said country? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Maybe, the word specialist comes agitator. We're going to stir some shit up here in Jalalabad in 5 days' time. Send us some munitions. Across the president's desk. Yeah, 5 days' time, we're going to fuck this shit up. All right, yeah, we know what's going on.
So, continuing that trend, the second article before we start digging into this a little bit more is... Oh, I've already pasted it. Never mind. I was getting ready to start, doing that whole stalling tactic while I paste it into the chat rooms. But not necessary, because I already did it. This is from The Guardian. ACLU finds social media sites give data to companies tracking black protesters. So, when Black Lives Matter was organizing on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, these companies were then turning around and giving that data to the police. Which, on one hand... Okay, before I read the... Well, let me read the article here before I start analyzing this. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram have previously provided users' data to a software company that aids police surveillance programs and targets protesters of color, according to government records obtained by the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU revealed on Tuesday that the technology corporations gave special access to Geofedia, a controversial social media monitoring company that partners with law enforcement and has marketed its services as a tool to track Black Lives Matter activists. Not to be rude to Black Lives Matter, but I'm betting that's not the only group of activists they're tracking. That's the only ones they're bringing up in the story. That's the journalist. But I'm willing to bet they're tracking a lot more than just Black Lives Matter. In response to the findings, all three companies have announced measures to cut off Geofedia's access to certain data streams, even though critics say the corporations need to adopt broader policies that prevent this kind of surveillance and data sharing. The ACLU's past record requests in California have determined that at least 13 police agencies have used or acquired Geofedia, a Chicago-based startup that has worked with law enforcement across the U.S., emails between the company and the police reveal that Geofedia has developer-level access to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, which means it could review streams of user content in ways that regular members of the public cannot, according to the ACLU. The fact that third parties are making big money off the sale and trading of our data with law enforcement is a huge problem, and one that any social media user in this country or beyond should be disgusted and surprised by, said Malakia Serial, executive director for the Center for Media Justice. Media justice. How do you?
Yeah, don't go down
those
the hole.
Words don't really.
Don't go down the hole. Stay away from the hole.
But it doesn't. Okay. It has urged companies to end their relationships with Geofedia. Blah 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 blah. So they had API access to several of these social networks. So,
all right, so Geofedia, or whatever they call themselves, have developer access to Facebook, Twitter, those sort of things?
Mm-hmm.
Black Lives Matter wants to get mad at Geofedia or whatever they call himself for harvesting their data.
Well, not the ACLU is the one calling it out, and they're trying to get Facebook and them to cut them off.
Let's go to the parent fucking source, Twitter, Facebook, who are probably getting well compensated for the use of their tools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that's what the ACLU wants. They want Facebook and them to cut them off.
But they're paying them. Yeah. Why would we cut them off from a service they're paying for?
Because they could be paying a revenue for, you know, something that could be a failing part of the internet, like YouTube.
Well, now, there were some spokespersons later in the article here. The spokesperson for Facebook, which owns Instagram, told The Guardian in a statement that Geofedia only had access to data that people chose to make public, adding, if a developer uses our API in a way that has not been authorized, we will take swift action to stop them and end our relationship with them if necessary. A Twitter spokesperson noticed the company prohibits the sale of user data for surveillance and has a developer policy that bans the use of its data to investigate, track, or surveil Twitter users. Obviously not stopping Geofedia. And I think the only reason these companies are coming out and saying, oh yes, we're going to cut them off, is they got caught.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, on one hand, let's stick with Black Lives Matter here, because that's the one in the article and that's the easy example. Those protests have turned into riots in the past. Mm-hmm. They've gotten violent. I mean, I'm arguing fact here on that one. So if you're a communications company that these groups are using, because that's ultimately Twitter and Facebook, they are the communication platforms that these groups are using to organize their protests, which have a history of turning violent, is it such a bad thing to give the cops a heads up that, hey, this group is looking to do something? So I guess broader and back to the NSA surveillance, is this a bad thing?
No. Because if you were to say this is a bad thing, Black Lives Matter, we shouldn't be spying on them, okay, then Islamic terrorism, that's just a protest movement as well. It gets occasionally violent. Do we spy on them?
See, and that's the thing. I tend to agree with you that I'm not certain that this is a bad thing, that the larger platforms are at least, I mean, because they're not doing it themselves, they're letting the people who want to do the investigation, you know, have, and it sounds like there's something, you know, some more vetting going on other than just, you know, they showed up and said, hey, give us all Braze data.
Well, yeah, I'm not a fan of protesting, because protesting does dick. You know, it's a great waste of a day. It's like playing golf, you know. You do a lot of walking, and at the end of the day, you just feel happy with the result, no matter what you fucking did.
You've obviously not played golf, because you're usually pissed off and wanting to throw your clubs and...
That's what that alcohol is involved with golf in MOPS.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's a lot more fun when you ding a water tower, though, I'll tell you that.
And I'm also saying that Black Lives Matter is Muslim extremists, white supremacists shouldn't exist. They have the fucking right to exist, but you don't have the right to violence. Violence to be dealt out by the state.
Yeah, you know, they're not censoring them. They're not stopping them from saying anything. They're just notifying the police that, hey, this group says they're going to go out and cause trouble. I mean, I don't see that that's a bad thing that they're monitoring this.
I mean, if you're texting out Black Lives Matter, let's kill Whitey on the weekend, looking forward to protesting and looting fucking downtown San Francisco, yeah, that's something law enforcement needs to know about.
But if you're dumb enough to post this shit on a public account, you kind of deserve what you get.
Well, that there you go. It's stuff they posted publicly, so they're putting it out there to begin with, so somebody just keeping an eye out on it.
If you were really concerned about surveillance, you wouldn't be using these platforms.
No. Not arguing their right to existence. They just don't have the right to privacy when posting.
Well, if they're going to post on somebody else's service, now if they go spin up their own servers to communicate on,
then I'd want a warrant.
Yeah, No, I mean, if they're gonna go spin up their own TeamSpeaks or I don't know, not Discord, because Discord's a hosted service, although that's the popular one right now.
If they're running a peer-to-peer program, I want a warrant.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. And that's I fair have enough? Some stuff on that later on. I think that's fair. But, I mean, if they're posting on somebody else's servers and that the company that they're posting on says, yeah, you know, we're not going to stop you, but if you say you're going to go bomb something or start a riot or do a protest, we reserve the right to let the police know you're going to do it. I mean, that you say yeah. you're going to do it. I mean,
or we reserve the right that a third party who's interested in making money off our site is going to do it on our behalf, on their behalf.
Oh, because you know they were paying them for access.
Oh, fuck you, dude. Development tools? Come on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm sure that's got a Twitter nice price Facebook tag on it. Development tools for, you know, the goodness of our heart for a public service to stop downtown from getting burnt. None of these companies do anything for a public service. If you believe they do, you're a fucking idiot. That way, if you believe Google is inherently good, you're a fucking idiot as well.
I think you're pretty much spot on there. So, that's probably not going to be the popular stance. Most people are going to be outraged. Oh my God, they're surveilling us. Yeah. you're advertising it. Do you not know what the internet is? When you hack a website, like if you're like I hacked the NSA's website, so somebody who knows what you're talking about, they don't hear that you hacked the NSA. They hear that you hacked a billboard put up by the NSA. Right?
Pretty much, man.
So if you're gonna go anything on the internet is public. Period. I don't care what your Facebook privacy settings are. If you're posting something on a computer that you don't own, you have no control over it. Period. I mean, I'm sure there's legal agreements and all this other stuff. No, at the end of the day, if it's not your computer, you don't control it.
I think you nailed it.
So, cloud computing gets iffy because you own the virtual instance, but you don't own the hardware, but that's a whole other argument. But generally, with these services, yeah. So, I don't know. BSV, do you have anything to add?
No. Pretty much just agree with the facts.
And RU's right. Black Lives Matter has every right to say whatever the hell they want on Twitter. And I have every right to ignore it.
I have every right to counteract with whatever I feel like saying, too.
Yeah. It's freedom of speech. If you don't, ultimately, freedom of speech, if you don't believe in it for people you disagree with, then guess what? You don't believe in. So I have no problem with Black Lives Matter saying whatever they want on Twitter. I also have no problem with whoever scraping Twitter saying, hey, these guys say they're going to go looting in Florida after the hurricane. So
that was a great list.
Wouldn't it?
We rail on about the NSA and the FBI, and we're fucking doing the exact same things on our own private time for shits and giggles.
Well, I mean, it's not like it's hard. It's one of those things it was like after some of the shootings, it's like, You mean the government's not trolling through everybody's social media profiles looking for who said they're going to go shoot up a school? I mean, what the fuck? So,
well,
because I mean, after some of the school shootings, they were finding like people's Instagrams and Tumblrs and shit where they're basically saying, "Hey, guess what I'm going to go do?" So, I think they should be watching it. If somebody's dumb enough to post it on a public forum.
I mean, yeah. Everyone accuses me of being this fucking big racist extremist, and I'm fucking not, man. It's like, I just believe you should be able to say or do whatever you want.
It has nothing to do with race.
You know?
No, okay, Black Lives Matter is the example in the article. It could be a white supremacy group. KKK, they can post whatever they want on their Twitter page. And if the KKK says they're going to do a rally, Twitter has every right to inform the police.
As I said, they do what you want. Everybody can do whatever they want, but there are consequences for that.
Yeah.
Like, there are consequences for shit you say, too. People are going to call you a jackass. They're going to call you a racist. You've got to be able to live with the consequences. You can't just state whatever you want and then just go, no, you can't say that back to me. No, no, they can. Because every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Whatever you say as a reaction, whatever you do as a reaction, you're just going to be, are you the person who can put up the consequences?
So here's a question for you. Somebody, I think it was a week ago, somebody laid out the new UKIP leader in Parliament.
Oh, yeah.
Like flat out laid him out.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what you think of UKIP, but a lot of people accuse them of being racist, and I haven't gone through all their shit, so I don't know if they are or not.
I don't know too much about it. I think Nigel Farage was leader of UKIP for a while.
Yeah, he was stepping down. Now he's coming back because nobody else wants the job.
Yeah, I mean, Nigel Farage is one of the a shining example of doing whatever you want, saying whatever you want, and he wears the consequences.
Yep.
And he wears it well, man. He wears it like a $3,000 suit. It just rolls off him. But yeah, I do not condone violence within the parliament. I think it's very unbecoming.
So
I think full assault charges should be filed, and that person should do at least 30 days prison.
So here's the next one up. First article up for today. This is from Mike.com, which the more I use this little website, the more I really don't like it. Got all this pop-up crap all over it asking for subscriptions to their newsletter and shit. So just to be aware when you go to it that it's kind of, I don't know. Anyways, this is hilarious. Derek Lawsetter, the anonymous affiliated hacktivist who helped expose a 2012 rape case against high school athletes in Steubenville, Ohio, is facing federal prosecution and a possible sentence of 16 years in prison for his alleged hacking. His case is scheduled to go on trial November 8th in Lexington, Kentucky. In a development that calls into question the prosecutor's technical savvy, on Tuesday, Assistant U.S. Attorney Nareej Gupta inadvertently published a trove of Lawsetter's personal information, including his and his wife's social security numbers, his phone number, the login and passwords for his private email and chat accounts, his laptop and PC passwords on Pacer, a publicly accessible database of federal court documents. The government feels as though they can prosecute a case for cybercrime, but they can't properly redact a document. Ty Farley, a crisis manager working on Lawsetter's case, said in an interview. Lawsetter's defense team first discovered the leak when the detractors disabled or distributed the information on social media. Since 2013, Lawsetter has been the target of harassment online, where his critics have claimed he doesn't deserve the notoriety for his role in exposing the Steubenville incident. So basically, they published all this document in PDFs and they tried to redact them, and they did it wrong. They did the whole just, you know, going into the PDF and putting a new layer on and putting the black bars on that layer and saving it. Not realizing that you can turn those layers off. There's all the text right under it.
And they're going to prosecute
For illegal information gathering, yeah.
A computer criminal information. No.
Through his lawyer, Lawsetter has asked the judge, Robert E. Weller, to seal the documents. A hearing is scheduled Wednesday to consider the matter. A spokesperson for the Office of U.S. Attorneys in the Eastern District of Kentucky acknowledged the error. Our office has been attempting to seal that information, the representative said in an email. Yeah, good luck with that. It's out now.
It's probably been snapshotted.
Oh, absolutely. The sensitive information was contained in an FBI report about a raid on Lawsetter's home on June 2013. Prosecutors tried to redact sensitive portions of the documents by placing black boxes over his personal information and passwords, but simply opening the document in a PDF reader allows the user to remove the boxes. The information can also be retrieved by copying the text and pasting it into a word processor. The user who created the redactions in the object metadata is N. Gupta, indicating that whoever redacted the documents used using software registered to Assistant U.S. Attorney Nareej Gupta, the leading prosecutor. So he probably did it himself. As of Wednesday afternoon, the information remains publicly available.
Wow.
Whoops.
And hell.
They're probably going to call for a mistrial based on that alone. There's all kinds of controversy over this guy because apparently back in 2012, he hacked in and found evidence that there was this rape case that was being suppressed. There's like high school athletes had been done some kind of a gang rape, and the school was burying it because they didn't want to lose their football team or something like that, and he exposed it. And so there's a lot of hate both ways on people for and against this guy. So I'm not familiar with it enough to even give any kind of opinion on this guy, but
I personally don't know the story, but I think Madman would probably say mistrial. There he is. He's up there. Wrangle him. Get him.
Are we wrangling Madman?
Why not? I need a cigarette. I need someone to take my spot.
Madman, you've been wrangled.
Madman's barbecuing chicken is AFK.
All right. We'll put him back. We'll put him back.
He's too small. Throw him back.
Okay. I don't think the TeamSpeak sounds come across the...
I don't know if they did.
From the other channel and pulled him down into ours.
He was too small. We throw him back. That's right, ladies. Too small.
Where's emergency! Emergency! Emergency!
Next article up is from Yahoo.
I'm going to have my halftime break smoke.
No, 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 sorry.
Smoke weed every day.
So, my RU is taking care of his personal business there. BSV and I can talk about this next story. Google has suffered a setback in an age discrimination suit this week. A judge ruled that other software engineers over the age of 40 who interviewed with the company but did not get hired can step forward to join the lawsuit. The suit was brought by two job applicants, both over the age of 40, who interviewed but were not offered jobs. Specifically, the judge has approved turning the suit into a collective action, meaning that people who interviewed in person with Google for a software engineer, a site reliability engineer, or systems engineer position when they were 40 years old or older and received notice on or after August 28, 2014 that they were refused employment will have an opportunity to join the collective action against Google. While this isn't good news for Google, the ruling was strictly focused on whether the suit could be broadened to include more people. It does not mean that Google is guilty. Google says it's fighting the suit. A spokesperson told us, "We believe the allegations here are without merit and we will continue to defend our position vigorously. We have strong policies against discrimination on any unlawful bias, including age." Interestingly, the judge is particularly not buying that policy is defense from Google, writing in the ruling. Having such a policy does not necessarily shield a company from a discrimination suit, particularly in light of the evidence and allegations presented here. Most, if not all, companies are well-versed in anti-discrimination and make great efforts to ensure their written policies comply with anti-discrimination law. In terms of allegations, one of the plaintiffs alleged that a Google recruiter told her she needed to put the dates of her graduation on her resume so interviewers could determine her age. That same plaintiff argued that if she had found seven others who say they'd had similar experiences at Google. She presented evidence to the court that the median age of Google's workforce is 29, while the median age for U.S. programmers is 42.8 years old. Google has about 61,000 employees, and we asked Google if the company had publicly released statistics on its median age. Age is not included with the company's published diversity report, which discusses sex and race, and Google did not respond. Let's see. Google's Greglers Google Group. However, we do know Google has a diversity club on campus called the Greglers, which is for Google employees over 40. The company describes it as a group for company elders that helps the company with promoting age diversity awareness. The company was sued way back in 2004 for age discrimination, and after winding through the appeal system, the case was ultimately settled out of court. Allowing people who went on job interviews but didn't get the job to join the suit is a turn of events. Some folks on Hacker News and site programmers discuss worry that instead of solving the tech industry's age discrimination problem, it's going to make it worse. Which is true, actually. You do usually hear that the more discrimination suits that are brought against companies for things like sex, race, discrimination, they tend to hire less people of, you know, color or women because they're concerned that if they hire this person, they're going to start bringing lawsuits against them down the road for, you know, one practice or another that, you know, nobody thinks anything about today, but now they've decided it's discriminatory, so...
About hiring someone on merit.
Yeah, you know, you'd think that. But they're saying Google won't hire anybody over age 40. So.
Why?
Well, there's actually a very good reason. If you're not 40 years old, you probably don't have a hell of a lot of experience in the industry. I mean, at most 10 years and maybe 15, depending on, you know, how well you did in school and if you graduated early or not. But generally, you're not going to have a hell of a lot of experience, so your wage isn't going to be all that high. But if you bring in a programmer with 20 years of experience, they're probably going to want six figures starting.
Yeah.
Especially in California.
So, but you're paying for the experience.
Oh, absolutely. You're going to, you know, if you get somebody with 20 years of experience, it's going to be way better than that college kid you're hiring. But that college kid you're hiring is going to be more, you know, is going to know a little bit more, or at least be willing to learn. Okay. Inexperience can be a good thing when you're hiring people if you're intending to train them up. Because if you've got somebody who's been programming for 20 years, they're going to want to program their way. They're going to want to use their algorithms, they're going to want to use their methodology, they're going to use their style. If you've got somebody who just graduated from college and you're willing to spend a few months training them, or even a year training them, you can train them to program the way you want your company to program. You can, you know, your style, your methods, whatever. So there is that. And like I said, 20 years experience, they usually want more money. So there is a reason for age discrimination, but it's hard to prove that it's that alone. It really is. Mm. But if the recruiters are actively asking what their age is, that's a problem.
I mean, because if you're like 55, you get 20 years experience, and you go in there and, well, are you willing to work for entry-level money? Are you willing? Yes or no?
No. Most of them are going to say no. So
then that's not age discrimination.
It's wage discrimination, which is totally fine. Like, nope, you can't afford me if that's what you're offering. So,
well, how do you price yourself? The market dictates how you price yourself. Are there shit tons of jobs going for 55-year-old programmers out there?
If you know COBOL.
All right, fair enough. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You're pricing yourself in the market.
If you're a senior developer with... especially things like Java, where there's still a lot of companies running on Java code. I mean, that's worth having if you've got a development team that's worth their salt. If you got a bunch of college kids who are, you know, tech hipsters and they got to use whatever the latest and greatest is, it's like, you know, Google just put out a new programming language. Just rewrite the entire infrastructure in that. I mean, it was, you know,
yeah.
It comes up. I worked with a guy who was a telecom engineer, but was one of these tech hipsters. He had to have an excuse to shove any new NoSQL database or language. He found an excuse to write a module or something in it for this telephone system, right? Then he gets fired, and we go through two more engineers trying to make sense of everything he had done because he had just shoehorned shit in because he wanted to play with it. So it's just kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, so you needed to build a house, but you actually build condominiums. Yeah, that's a lot of shit we don't need.
So we needed to build a house, but this brand new backhoe came out, so I bought that, and we're going to use it to build this house. But that's for tearing things down. No, it'll be fine. And then you're trying to figure out why the house is shaped funny. It's because they were putting walls up with a fucking backhoe because they couldn't figure out what else to do with it.
they can only make so many pools.
And that's been Analogy Corner on Pure Decking for this month.
Yeah, that one was pretty weak, wasn't it? Pretty out there.
So he goes, drops that in the boardroom thinking they're going to be good for next week. Nope.
So, backhoe, what the fuck are you talking about?
Ted, get out. You're fired.
Like, fucking lost. What happened to Ted? We threw him out the window.
Something about building this company with a backhoe. I don't know.
Don't we write software? Yes.
Why is he calling Caterpillar? What the fuck?
What's the Dilbert comic? The bald guy stands up. What is it we make here again?
Pretty much.
Next story is from WGNTV.com. Comcast is being forced to pay the largest fine the FCC has ever levied against a cable operator. It's offense, charging customers for services and equipment they did not ask for. What was the bank a couple of weeks ago that was doing this?
I can't remember.
Was it? No.
It might have been.
Was it? Well, one of the banks was doing this a few weeks ago, too, so I guess this is the trend.
I like that. It's not a scandal because you can't remember the bank. It's because so many banks do shifty shit now. It's hard to keep up with who's doing what.
The company has agreed to pay a $2.3 million civil penalty and to submit to a compliance plan in which regulators will monitor Comcast for the next 5 years to ensure it cleans up its act. It is basic that a cable bill should include charges for only services and equipment ordered by the customer. Nothing more, nothing less. Excuse me, Travis LeBlanc, chief of the FCC Enforcement Bureau, said in a statement. The FCC said it received over 1,000 complaints from customers who said Comcast charged them for premium channels, cable boxes, DVR, or other products that they never ordered. In many cases, the FCC said the customers expressly told Comcast they did not want the add-ons, but were charged for them anyways. The complaints also described how customers spent significant time and energy attempting to remove the unauthorized charges and get refunds, the commission said. The complaints spurred the FCC to launch an investigation nearly 2 years ago. Today, the settlement marks the conclusion of the probe. Under the five-year compliance plan, Comcast must begin sending customers special notifications every time a new charge or service is added to their bill. The company also has to add a way for customers to easily block the addition of new services or equipment to their accounts. According to an FCC press release, you have to actually be able to block new stuff getting added to your account. God, I mean, think about that for a minute.
So it's an opt-out. God damn it.
Comcast will also be required to compensate for or address complaints from customers who have disputed charges, and it will be barred from referring an account to collections or suspending an account that is a disputed charge. Comcast said Tuesday that it does not agree with the commission's decision to take legal action, but the company admitted it's fallen short in times of customer service. Fallen short? I'm pretty sure Comcast has beaten out, like, Monsanto as far as most hated company in the world, like, three or four years running. I mean, like, it's like, here we have a company that goes out and actively sues and murders farmers because they managed to throw seeds on their land versus your cable provider. Who do you hate more? The cable provider. My God. So,
well, when you outsource your helplines to hell, it doesn't turn out well.
You know, here we have Bear Aspirin, who actually made gas for the Nazis, versus Comcast. Who do you hate more? Fuck Comcast, we'll take the Nazi pills. Comcast said Tuesday doesn't agree with the findings. In our view, after 2 years, it is telling that the FCC found no problematic policy or internal wrongdoing, but just isolated errors or customer confusion. They're blaming it on the customers. The company's statement reads, it added, "We agree those issues should be fixed and are pleased to put those behind us and proceed with the customer service enhancing changes." Bullshit, they're happy about that. What's happened, and this is actually really easy to figure out, Comcast's system for dealing with shit you don't want is insane. And they put so much stress on their telephone operators to upsell services. And they've been stated as having quotas. You remember a couple of years ago, the tape came out where the guy was trying to cancel his Comcast bill, and the guy on the other end of the phone basically told him, "No, you're not canceling this."
Yeah, and, I remember.
You know,
that
made him read out this whole thing, and big deal. And you know, they do that shit on purpose, but they do that not because the company has any policy saying you have to make it impossible to cancel. They have a policy saying that they're frontline employees have to meet so many quotas of retained accounts and add-on services or they lose their job. So it's very similar to the bank a couple of weeks ago that, you know, that to meet the incentives, they're cheating. They're saying, yes, this person agreed to this, when obviously on the phone recording they said, no, fuck no, I don't want that.
Yeah.
And, you know, then, of course, because Comcast is Comcast and there's no competition, you know, it's not like you can just cancel your service and go with the next cable provider down the block because you don't have a choice. Your cable service is determined by where you live, at least in the States. Unless you want to go for satellite or like a fiber line service from, say, a Verizon or an AT&T, you really don't have a hell of a lot of choice. So they have no incentive to clean up their act. So I guess if you're going to make government monopolies, you need the government to come in and clean up the mess, but rather just have some competition. These problems would solve themselves without needing the FCC to step in and regulate the fuck out of them, you know? But I guess if that's the way it's going to be, you're going to have the FCC stepping in because, you know, otherwise Comcast is just going to keep doing this shit.
They could just start allowing other companies in.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ari.
I mean, 2.3 million?
Yep.
What do they make that an hour?
I'm sure they get it out of the change in the couch.
Pretty much, man. So, really, they got the equivalent to stomp it.
The fact that it happened to be the largest fine ever, notwithstanding, but I mean, you're right. You look at Comcast's revenue.
If you read it, the article words it, it's the largest fine Comcast have ever had to pay themselves to the FCC.
Oh, is that what it said?
Yeah, it seems like that. So this is not their first fucking, you know, go around.
They probably have a fund set aside for just buying off the FCC.
Pretty much.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they call it in their spreadsheet, the FCC payoff fund.
Yeah.
Fuck, yeah. I would if it was my spreadsheet.
Or it's the account known as For the Lulz.
Although I have columns in my reports that say, you know, requires a time machine, so... these are reports that go out to, like, you know, CIO and everything else, you know, shit requiring a time machine, so...
Wow.
I had one of them ask me about it. I said it's a joke, but it just, you know, means that somebody put a due date in that was due before the ticket was created. But, you know, hey.
Those are always fun.
Yeah, so literally it requires a time machine. I don't know how else to solve that. So, like, you created the ticket today, you set it due last Friday. Da fuck. I mean, like, well, that's what it should have been done.
Good workplace motivation. Great. It's a management technique.
Yeah. It's like, we're trying to induce urgency. No, that's a way to get me to ignore it, actually. It's like, well, we missed that one. Next. So. Anyways, this next one is from Torrent Freak and sounds kind of cool. Web-to-web. Running a fully functional website on a regular browser without any central servers being involved sounds complicated, but web-to-web isn't. The project, powered by WebTorrent and Bitcoin, allows anyone to create updatable websites that are as resilient as it gets. Most people associate torrents with desktop clients. However, browser-based WebTorrent is equivalent, or the browser-based WebTorrent equivalent is quickly gaining popularity. Put simply, WebTorrent is a torrent client for the web. Instead of using a standalone application, it allows people to share files directly from their browser without having to configure or install anything. It allows people to stream videos directly from regular browsers such as Chrome and Firefox, similar to what they do with YouTube. The technology was created by Stanford University graduate, oh god, that's a name, Firas Abadukulak. Seriously, he's got like vowels in places that shouldn't be there.
Pakistan or India.
Yeah. Abukhadijeh. I'm too American to say that. I'm sorry.
Maybe Russian.
Bob. We're now referring to him as Bob. Already piped the entrance of Netflix and also results in various innovative implementations. Most recently, Czech developer Michael Spica created the web-to-web project, which allows people to share entire websites using WebTorrent technology. This makes these sites virtually impossible to take down. Micah tells Torrent Freak that he is fascinated by modern technology and wants to develop resilient, serverless, and anonymous platform for people to share something online. In the past, we've seen powerful interest groups shut down legitimate websites. I wonder if I could come up with something that can't be taken down that easily and protects the site operator's identity. For most websites, the servers and domain names are the most vulnerable aspects, and both can easily be seized and are far from anonymous. Web-to-web, people can run a website without any trace of the above. To run a web-to-web website, neither the server nor the domain is required. All you need is a bootstrap page that loads your website from the torrent network and displays it in the browser. While there are similar alternatives available, such as ZeroNet, the beauty of web-to-web is that it works in any modern web browser. This means there's no need to install separate software. The bootstrap page... Go ahead.
I'm just listening to this. This is fucking amazing tech. What this guy's doing. And he really needs to start getting up every morning, taking a selfie with the time and date and "I'm not suicidal" written on a note.
You know, and every stay away morning. From small aircraft and don't get in jacuzzis. And
don't lift weights.
Yeah, keep an eye out for little red dots appearing, you know, like a laser pointer. And, yeah.
I mean, he's really making it a lot more difficult to shut down WikiLeaks and other places like that.
The Bootstrap page that serves all content is a simple HTML file that can be mirrored anywhere online or downloaded to a local computer. With help from Bitcoin, the operator can update the file, which will allow people to see the new version. So I guess he's storing it in the blockchain. If the website operator wants to publish new content on his previously created website, he creates a torrent of the new content first and then inserts the torrent info hash into a Bitcoin transaction sent from his Bitcoin address, Michael says. The website is constantly watching that address for new transactions, extracts the info hash, downloads the new content from the torrent swarm, and updates itself. Oh, that's awesome. So yeah, they're putting the hash in the Bitcoin or in the blockchain. It's just a little HTML page, which HTML doesn't actually have to be on a server. You could just pass it around or throw it up on like a paste bin, say download it, save it as HTML, and open it. And yeah, it's a web page, it's a website and a torrent that all you need is a web browser. I mean, you could use like a Dropbox account to host these things, or Mega, or any number of the free hosts out there. Yeah, shit.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea.
That's awesome. He has no clear vision of how people will use it, but he stresses he's not promoting or encouraging illegal uses in any way. In the meantime, this perfectly legal so he's got a demo and more info on how to do it right here in GitHub. So
I suppose that disclaimer at the end, there's no difference to Ford Motors going, well, it's a car. And it goes from point A to point B at varying different speeds. And, at the end of the day, if someone decides to misuse it, then I don't really want them to do that, but this is what it does.
So I've just loaded up the demo, and it took it a minute to load, and now it's showing me imagery from Hubble.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's playing a video. But it's actually, I see it streaming it now. So,
that's cool.
Okay, web to web project is now also going in Digital Dojo along with a few other things. I should have read the article a little bit more closely. I didn't know he had it working. When I saw the article, I thought it was something they were working on. It was close. I didn't realize that it was actually working.
That's
cool. So we'll put that in right before the YouTube link for Digital Dojo. So that's awesome. I do Darknet to explore.
Yeah.
All right. Next one up is from the BBC. Get these links posted. Apple fire staff amid claims that intimate photos were shared via an Australian store. Apple has fired a number of employees at a store in Brisbane, Australia, amid allegations they shared photos of female customers and colleagues and ranked their bodies out of 10. In a nice feminist culture like Australia, that's just a no-no.
Fucking geniuses.
Brisbane's Courier Mail said dozens of photos were taken without knowledge or consent and that other images were stolen from customer phones. Well, shit, that... Dudes right there, shit. Apple confirmed in an inquiry that several jobs have been terminated, but it says its inquiry had not so far shown that any photos have been stolen. No one has been photographed without consent, the inquiry had indicated.
Oh. In the opening line, it says other images were stolen from customer phones. Yeah, then it says...
And then Apple is the one saying, nothing bad happened, nothing to see here, no photographs were stolen... We just fired some people. Don't worry about it.
They weren't stolen. They were copied.
Oh, right. The photos, including more than 100 close-up and intimate images, according to the Courier Mail, were said to have been shared and the woman's bodies then raided. The newspaper... That one's only an 8. The newspaper said the possible privacy breach came to light after a fellow employee noticed the store technician looking through a customer's phone in the repair room. One staff member told the newspaper they were concerned the same thing was happening in other Australian Apple stores, including in Sydney. Apple said the allegations, if true, would constitute a violation of the company's business conduct policy. Apple believes in treating everyone equally with respect. We do not tolerate behavior that goes against our values. We have met with our store team to let them know about the investigation and inform them about the steps Apple is taking to protect their privacy. The Australian Privacy Commissioner is also looking into the alleged privacy breach. We are aware of reports. This is an important reminder that all organizations that collect and manage personal information, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, a bunch of kids working at the Apple stores when they would back up phones. Of course, they would work on phones. They would copy off the nudes that they were finding and share them. And the fact that they were rating them is kind of comical, but that's just more, that's just, you know, feminists be offended. They were rating women's bodies kind of language.
Considering the naked body is very subjectable, I find their rating system completely outdated.
It's like, have you seen a beauty pageant? Because I'm pretty sure they do the same thing. The fact that the women didn't know they were on display is maybe another thing. But in all seriousness, you know, just delete the nudes from your phone before you take it to get worked on if you can.
Once again, if it's, as we were saying earlier, if it's your digital device and you let it out of your sight or anything like that, and it's your own fault.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, so in Australia, they're pitching a fit over people stealing, you know, intimate photos and close-ups from phones and saying, you know, people in the store were photographing people. It's like, yeah, but, like, in Japan, don't they, like, get groped on the trains, like, regularly?
That's why they have female-only carriages.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, so, I mean, if kind of like, you know, it's probably not as bad as you're making it out to be there, buddy. So, next article is from Engadget. Apparently, more people watch the second presidential debate on YouTube rather than on traditional television. I don't know that I have anything to add to the article. They just kind of explained to it that, you know, the debate, the town hall debate saw a peak of 1.5 million viewers versus 2 million last time. 124 million worldwide on the stream, 63 million on TV. So, I don't know if there's anything really to talk about here. It's just kind of interesting they're acknowledging that YouTube had more people watching the debate than regular television. Next.
Pretty much.
Well, I mean, there's nothing really to discuss there. It's just, the internet's finally starting to pass regular television. Surprising nobody. I mean,
yeah. I mean, like, you just have to look at, I think, Game of Thrones, the most pirated television show ever.
Oh, yeah.
And it took them, what, 4 seasons to realize that, you know, maybe being 6 months behind the US in Australia, they need to really start fast forwarding it because. Yeah, we've got to be comparative within the releases, otherwise the internet's going to get all the traffic.
I get a phone call about once a month from my cable provider saying, so what do you use for TV? Netflix. Well, can we interest you in the movie packages? No. why are you not interested in this? Because I'm not going to waste money on something I'm not going to watch.
Pretty much.
I had one kid going for a while there. I just was like, why would I want this? I'm not going to use it. And then he went round and round, and I basically broke him off his script, and then he tried to snap back on it. He's like, well, what's your hesitation? My hesitation is I'm not going to buy something I'm not going to use. Why the fuck would I do that? And again, he didn't have an answer, so he just starts reading his script again. I like messing with people on the phone too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that comes from growing up knowing how to red box and blue box. Anyways, sorry, I had a box caught in my throat there.
You right, Hillary?
Yes. Hang on, I don't think I can sound quite as evil as she does. you need that good hoof clopping as she walks in the room before, laughing when she finds out somebody she didn't like was killed.
Take a quick shot of blood of innocent children, and
I don't tend to keep that one in stock. I think Static had the blood of the innocent on hand. I might ask him for some. Actually, there's a great clip that nobody's been playing lately, except one of the podcasts I like of after Hillary found out Gaddafi had been killed, you know, laughing her head off at it. Like, yep, and we're gonna make her president. Fuck.
Do you buy Blood of the Innocent on Amazon?
Probably. Let's see here. Amazon.com blood of the in.
And there it is. Wonder yes, why you get odd suggestions.
Lots of books named that. You can absolutely get Blood of the Innocent on it. I was expecting a lot of books to come up for that. Yeah, it's right here next to Soylent. oh, look, and they've come up with Soylent Green. Oh, no, that's coffee. Never mind, Soylent Coffee. You all see that Soylent was making people sick? Yeah, of course you did. We were talking
about
that. So,
what an attractive product that looks like, too.
Yeah. I'm tempted to order it just to see if, like, it makes you horribly sick or, you know, tastes horrible or something. But it's like, I was thinking it'd be fun to order on a lark, and then I saw the price of the stuff. I'm like, nope.
dude, never mind. It's actually quite popular.
I know, that's the weird part. It's like, no, you don't eat anything. You just drink these little bottles of nutrients. I'm like, what?
I prefer meal.
Yeah, no shit,
apparently,
right?
It's really big with League of Legends and WoW players.
I can see that. It's like, I'm not wasting time eating. I'm just chugging the Soylent.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I saw a lot of threads this week about people claiming that the article was bullshit and they've been on, you know, they've had nothing but 6 months on this shit. Apart from turning their crap blue, you know, they're fine.
That's healthy. It's like, no, that's just the chlorine tablet their mother put in the toilet so she wouldn't have to clean
it. No, it's like halfway
off.
Down this thread of these people like, yeah, I eat this shit all the time. And there's like some dudes just say, anybody else's poo go blue from this? And then it's like, after that, yep. I'm like, fuck.
That's healthy. I was thinking about ordering it just to try it, but when I saw the price of it, now you're telling me it turns my shit blue. It's like,
Yeah, it's just like fucking weird, man. I didn't realize how big the cult of Soylent was amongst serious hot gamers, man.
It's like you know you're playing too much Minecraft when your shit turns into Lapis. I mean, just all right, next article.
Just article. Don't make blue wall with it.
Blue waffle much? Anyways.
Oh, gross.
This one's from Utility Dave. Beer batteries. Colorado researchers use brewery wastewater to produce electrodes. Researchers in Colorado have found a way to use wastewater from brewing beer to produce lithium-ion battery electrodes. Researchers say using brewery wastewater could provide a more efficient and potentially cheaper source of materials for electrode production. University of Colorado Boulder researchers have filed a patent on the process and created Emergy, I guess, a Boulder-based company aimed at commercializing the technology. Beer and science don't always go together. Bullshit. But researchers at the University of Colorado, blah, 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 blah. It takes 7 barrels of water to produce 1 barrel of beer, and brewers have to spend money to filter the wastewater before disposing of it. Other biological materials, such as timber, can be used to make carbon-based battery electrodes, but supplies are limited, and the interest in chemistry can make the process expensive and difficult. By cultivating their feedstock and wastewater, the UBC researchers say they were able to better control the chemical and physical process to create a efficient, naturally derived lithium-ion battery electrode while cleaning the wastewater in the process. Okay, that's cool. So the process produces fast-growing fungus, Neurospora carsa, in a sugar-rich wastewater, which can be used to make anodes for lithium-ion batteries. Pretty much, they have found a fungus that they throw in beer wastewater that eats up everything in the wastewater and produces a chemical to make batteries. That's awesome.
So they get batteries, beer, and clean water. What's not to like?
So that's awesome, and I just wanted to point out that this exists, and I think it was cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
If it's comparative on price.
So, actually, they think it's cheaper. So,
I mean,
even better.
You know what I mean? It's not just an academic wank we're having.
Yeah.
Like, this is a thing. Yeah. It may come true down the track, but I just hope it's not one of these academic wanks we seem to have over different forms of energy each couple of years.
Well, the fun part about if they actually had one that produces a viable, commercially successful source, I'm all for it. This whole bullshit of, oh no, you have to use the alternative because it's green. You've seen how solar panels are made? Or, you know, windmills. Well, windmills aren't as bad as solar panels. They're just big. But,
hey, like, we had our state that ran its energy resources on 60% renewables go dark for 3 days because, you know, wind doesn't blow, sun doesn't shine.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Well, solar panels, the chemicals used to make solar panels are pretty nasty stuff. And as far as windmills go, that's one of those things that's kind of situational, and a lot of people don't like them. You know, the whole health thing may or may not be real, but a lot of people don't like them.
So. I don't know, man. Have you been close to one?
They're loud.
Yeah.
Man, it's like...
My dog hearing with that harmonics they put off when there's three or four of them just cranking.
Yeah.
I get very disorientated. Like, it really starts messing with my inner ear.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, I mean, that's the thing, though. I mean, like, you get the flicker of light through the thing and they're making constant racket. I mean, I could see that driving somebody nuts.
Dude, but especially... And also, have you seen one when it shakes itself apart?
Yes. Yeah, that's always good. And they burst into flame every once in a while. That's
it looked like a UFO hit them. Yeah, like a cloaked UFO. Because one minute they're just spinning and next thing they're wrapped around each other from fucking nothing.
Of course, it would be really bad if your house was in the splatter zone for every time a flock of birds decided to fly through one of the damn things. I work in a high rise, dude, and you occasionally hear a thump and you just look over the window and you see a bird falling. It's just dumbass. So it's one of those things where it's like, it kills birds. Birds are dumb. They fly into buildings all the time, so it's not all that surprising they try to fly through a windmill.
It's only recent. I've moved around, like, a lot of trees. Like, we had a couple of trees, but these are really big. The amount of birds that crash into branches trying to land and then have to bail out, it's fucking comical. I wouldn't have thought it happened so often. You know, I would not have thought it happened so often.
I just always get a kick out of thump because it's like, you know, it's like, man, I wonder why the glass is so thick. Is that to insulate it a bit? Oh no, that's so birds don't fly through it.
Yeah,
I guess it's so you don't go flying out of it either. But I mean, I can hook a chair pretty good, so if I had to get through that window,
depending on how many stories up, so air pressure changes, man.
That's true too. Yeah. Oh that's... yeah, you're right because you got to worry about these buildings actually making their own atmosphere high enough up. So.
Depending on how high you go in these things, that's
or not atmosphere windows... climate. But yeah.
Yeah, they're, depending on how high you go, the windows become bulletproof at some point.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's a remember that we had that article, people complaining it was too cold in these buildings because that was sexist somehow. It's like no, they're trying to keep the building from rotting.
There you go.
Let's move on to, nope, that's not the right link. I'll fix the link while the thing's playing. Let's do this. Yo! Hadouken! So, first object I have up in Digital Dojo today is robbomb.com put together a nice guide on installing a relatively recent Ubuntu on a Nexus 7 tablet. This is pretty cool. And it's probably a similar process for the newer ones if you got a newer Ubuntu, because I think he did the 2012 tablet. Apparently, the latest Android versions on them. I haven't turned my Nexus 7 on in a long time, but apparently, the latest versions of Android are rather rough on the older Nexus line. So you put a older build of Ubuntu on there. Apparently, it runs nice. So I thought that was cool.
Fair enough.
And worth playing with. So, next one up. This is interesting because it's something I've been meaning to play with, and if it takes off, I'll set one up for G15. It's called Matrix.org, and it's a chat and WebRTC signaling system that's based around the same concept of email. So, what I mean by that is, it's decentralized. Like anybody, well, that's harder these days because spamless. Like, but in theory, anybody can set up an email server, put their MX records in their domain, And when if you try to send to whoever at that domain, it'll go to their email server because the sending email server does an NX lookup, gets the MX record, and then has the IP address to connect to drop off the mail. This system is very much like that in that you put the records for the chat server in your DNS. So if somebody on G15 wants to message with somebody on I Have Nothing, the two servers would do DNS lookup to establish their connection with each other, and it's a decentralized chat system. But it can also do WebRTC, so you can do video and audio chat as well through WebRTC, so you can do it on the browser. And if systems like this takes off, I'd love to play with it on G15. So I might spin one of these things up anyways just to play with it. Yeah. But anyways, it's cool because it's decentralized chat and Skype replacement, basically. And there's the Riot client for it, works with it. And there's all kinds of different stuff out there. They've got a whole bunch of clients and stuff on the webpage for it. So it's interesting. It's probably early days for this kind of stuff, but I like the concept of the service. You know, you run your own service on your domain and just have a DNS record for it. That way, your service can connect to anybody else who set one up just through DNS. You just have to know the name of the server you want to talk to. And it would be something along the lines of, I guess if you're on the same server, it's not even a big deal. But if I wanted to chat with somebody on a different server, because it'd be their username at that server, that tells it how to find it. So it already works for email. Why not? So, hell, I've seen enough people use email as a chat system anyways. So... gosh, that's whenever people expect email to be performant. It's like, you do realize this system was designed to eventually deliver your mail in days, right? It's like, why haven't I got this message? I sent it 2 minutes ago. Well, it's email. It's like, no, it has to be now. I'm supposed to get this now. It's email? It can take it a minute?
It's faster than paper mail, but still mail.
Sometimes. Yeah. Unless the servers are having issues, it can be slower. But anyways, so next up is the web-to-web link that we were talking about earlier. This is the actual the demo page and the index. So he's got the live demo, the why, how it works, and how to set it up on the concept here. So he's even got a, if you want to make your own, here's how to do it in the gateway. So if you want to get started with web-to-web, there's the page for that. And again, quite cool, new darknet to explore. I'm hoping to see an index of those things. Then finally, last thing I have for Digital Dojo tonight is a YouTube link. And that would be Iron Geek's playlist for GurrCon 2016. There's some videos in here that I thought looked interesting. You know, the world of yesterday, tomorrow. He's probably talking about Internet of Things crap. Fish Your Employees for Fun. Piercing Air Gap Networks, You've Inherited a Security Department, Now What? Alignment of Business and IT Security. There's some videos in here I'm going to be watching. 101 Bad Mistakes I've Made. There's some videos in here definitely worth watching. So, you know, standard Iron Geek presentation videos where he does the split screen and all that stuff. So,
cool.
Always good to have. Anyways, that's all I've got for decking. You have anything for decking, are you? Anything you want to cover?
Nah, man, I'm pretty good for this week.
BC, did you bring anything for the party?
I just have my beer.
One yeah. Beer split three ways.
Yeah.
Gonna be a sad party.
All right, gentlemen, that's all I've got for tonight. I'm gonna play the Pac-Man sound and close it out.